All right, well, good evening. I know it got quiet right at 6 o'clock. I'll go ahead and call to order our city council, pre-council for Monday, January 5th, the first one of 2026. Our main topic is our budget priorities as staff prepares fiscal year 27 budget. Didn't we just do fiscal 26 budget? Yeah.
Yes, we did.
All right, so I'm gonna kick it over to Matt Liu for presentation. Are you okay with questions at any time, or do you want to go through your slides?
We can do questions at any time.
Okay, all right, Matt, I'm gonna kick it over to you.
Want to start it out with the current strategic priorities. This is something that we're looking at redoing this year, and I believe we'll go through that process sometime soon here. But currently our strategic plan priorities are organizational excellence, safe community, inclusive and equitable community, resilient economy, reliable and sustainable infrastructure. And so these are our five main goals. For fiscal year 26, we had three main priorities, which were public safety, affordable housing, and city employees. And so we'll break down what that included in the next few slides. So for public safety, we have the addition of six full-time police positions and reassignment of four park rangers and two airport safety officers to police officer positions. We continue the investment in flock safety system and Axon technology upgrades. We have the addition of two positions for the city's divert program. And then we have the continuation of additional $1 million investment into the police and fire pitcher, which was basically $500,000 for each group. For housing, we have the continued investment in additional homes with the Columbia Community Land Trust. We'll begin assessment of recommendations outlined in the Boone County Housing Study, and then the CDBG home budget increased by 18.6% from FY25 budget. We also saw an increase in, we also saw an increase in the housing permits for fiscal year 2024 going into 25. We don't have 26 numbers yet, of course, but we did see a substantial increase from 24 to 25. But I guess if they want to hear them. Do you all want to hear the numbers?
I think we had them in our crosswalk okay. That we did with the county at the work session a couple weeks ago. So it's that attachment that we had. So we did get that update.
I would say in this year, I think we need to, I mean, not trying to tell the council what to do or anything, but I think things that are within our purview, things that we can control, or things that we could be more actionable with as we go through the priorities for this year.
Be more actionable with.
Keep the microphone on.
Sorry. It's hard to get used to the microphone. You mean items for housing that we can be more actionable with?
Yeah, I mean, just all together with our priorities. I think that's something we definitely want to think about this year as we're building these priorities. I don't think that's something that the council necessarily needs to figure out here. I think we can figure that out together as we go through the process, but it's something that needs to be on the front of everyone's mind.
Yeah, agreed. Something that I guess as we are fleshing out the budget process and moving forward in tandem with the housing study, I hope to see more of the connections from the crosswalk action plan reflected in the items specifically that we are budgeting for. The other thing that came to mind was the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which I think we seeded with $1 million last fiscal year 25.
I think we seeded in, was it 24?
24. Yeah, it's been, okay. Yeah, so finding additional methods to continue to fund that, I think, will be important for longevity of that fund.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and then lastly was the city employees. And so we increased funding by 5.8% for personnel and 10% for employee medical benefits. Pay ranges and employee pay increased by 3.5% in fiscal year 26. And the city is moving forward with classification and compensation study phase 3, which will focus on performance management. So we hope to get that all in place this year.
Can I ask, Matt, on the 10% for employee medical benefits, the big thing with that was that the city paid the cost for the increase and didn't pass it on to employees. That was that 10% increase was because of that increase in cost?
That's correct. And I'm,
Kathy, can you come closer to a microphone?
I want closer.
I have one.
Over by you.
Yes, ma'am.
So that 10% increase.
We're recording, so just it's microphone.
It's a, okay. It's a microphone. It's a microphone.
You can pick it up. Yeah. How's that? You can pick it up.
So the 10% increase to health insurance premiums actually just took effect on January 1st, and that increase was shared between employees and the city. We went to a new system. Previously, we had contributed a flat amount to each level of insurance, and we went to a percentage. So I'm going to give a real simple example with employee-only coverage. So the city provides employee-only coverage for the high-deductible health plan. The city contributes 100% of the cost, not a flat amount. If you want to buy up to the 1,500 1,500 PPO plan, the city is going to cover 95% of the cost of the employee-only coverage. If you are still in the 750 deductible plan that's closed to new enrollees, then that's another buy-up, and it's 90% of the cost for employee-only coverage. And then we contribute a flat amount for dependents, the same amount for every plan.
And that was new this year. Previously, we had covered.
We had a flat dollar amount, and I'm sorry, I don't have it off the top of my head. Previously, it was a flat dollar amount, and we changed to a percentage that went into effect January 1st.
Okay. Yeah, Valerie.
And the change in cost, the 10% change in cost for our budget, does that reflect the change in the way that we're covering it? Or does that reflect a change in expense because of an increase in cost of health coverage?
So there was a 10% increase to the gross premium for our rates. And that amount, the 10% is that total gross premium, which is increased contribution by employees and increased contribution by the city. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah, I was trying to understand if you were explaining how that increase was shared or where that came from. So do we expect year to year the cost of health coverage for employees to continue increasing around that amount?
I'm not sure about the amount, but based on past experience, I do expect there to be continued increase in costs. We're self-funded, and so the two things that drive our cost are medical inflation and claims experience. And so you don't know year from year, right, what those numbers are going to be. But I do, I mean, just based on past experience, I would say, yes, we expect those to continue. I just can't tell you at what rate.
Yeah. I wonder if it would be helpful to look at previous years and rates of
interest. I have all of that data. I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared to discuss this tonight.
I don't expect you to have it at your fingertips now.
Yes.
But maybe that would be helpful for future budget presentations. so we can understand what prolonged costs are for personnel.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah.
With that change from a flat rate covered to the percentage covered, have we seen costs to employees go down? Have we seen employees paying less than they had to, or is it about the same for them? Has it gone up because of the rising cost of healthcare?
So it did go up for employees this year, except for those that have employee only coverage in the high deductible health plan, because we are continue to pay 100% of that. In addition to that, we also increased our contribution to the health savings account as well. So that the city is contributing that full amount to those employees that are in the high deductible health plan. If I'm saying this off the top of my head, but I believe the highest amount that anybody's premium went up by would have been in the full family $750 deductible, which is our closed plan. You would have had to have a minimum of a 17 cent per hour increase to cover that cost. And the 2% across the board we gave in September more than covered that for all of our employees. Plus our employees are getting an additional 1.5% that you approved effective January 18th.
You're saying that their pay raise covered the raise in their health insurance cost?
More than covered it, yes.
But their health insurance cost, so what I'm hearing is that their health insurance cost went up about as much as their pay raise?
No. What I'm saying is if you were in the highest plan, the most expensive plan, which is the $750 deductible full family, meaning you have, spouse plus dependents on there, the most increase you would need to cover that increase would have been a 17 cent per hour pay increase. And so all of our employees received more than that.
$353.
And that's in our most expensive plan. Some of our plans, some of the tiers didn't go up any, some went up a couple of cents. That was the highest amount.
Thank you.
And we have 3 employees enrolled in that plan.
All right, thank you, Pat.
Sorry, I wasn't prepared to discuss that tonight.
No. I think to Valerie's point, we're trying to understand trends as we're setting, to Matthew's point, understanding what we have control over as we're setting priorities. So appreciate that.
Okay. I have another question on this section, but not on the benefits piece. With the pay ranges and employee pay increasing, and that amount coming out of the reserves. I keep wanting to say, I keep coming up with different words for them. Reserves. What is the, considering that this was a priority last year and it's likely to stay a priority, what is the plan for getting it out of reserves and getting it into the regular budget?
I'm not quite sure I can answer that right now. That's something we'll have to see as we go through the budget. But for us to not dip into reserves, there would definitely need to be some sort of cutback in another budgeting category within the general fund.
Well, and I think to that point, it would probably be useful in this, not for this evening's discussion, obviously, but part of when we do our budget work sessions and things like that. In 24, when we said, yes, fund the classification and compensation plan, we believed that based on revenues coming in, that we would be able to work with that. And the reality has not aligned with that. And so I think while this is the way municipal governments do things, it's on budgeting and these forecasts. And I think kind of understanding the as we're talking about revenues generation coming in, what is expected, so that we can be realistic with our promises to employees.
As we sort of look into the future and what has happened over the last few years, we always expect to grow at least with the population. Right. Population growth about 1.5 to 2% per year. In fiscal year 25, we saw a decrease in sales tax. And this is the first time we've had a decrease in sales tax I want to say since the housing bubble. Yeah. And so it's been a long time since something like this has happened. And that's not something that you plan for. And so as we begin to look forward, could that happen again this year? It is possible. We have seen decrease in sales tax revenue receipts in the first few months of this year already. So it's yet to be seen what we'll be facing for the rest of this fiscal year.
Well, when we made this determination about increase of compensation, we made a decision also at the same time that we were going to lead the market in compensation and so forth. So I guess I'm wondering, and that was 23, right, that we made that decision. So this far in now, are we still in that position, especially keeping in mind healthcare benefits in particular?
I believe, Kathy, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I believe we're talking about looking, not doing a full study, but looking at that again within a year or so. Is that? I don't want to put words into her mouth, but
just don't use that.
We got to see more.
So we look at the consumer price index from December to December each year as a guideline. That's one of the economic factors we consider when looking at the pay plan. So for FY26, the year that we are in, the CPI was 3.2%. We did a 3.5% increase. And we did that both with our pay ranges and employee pay. So the ranges moved by that much as well as employee. So the first year we implemented this in FY24, we were at 6.7% above market. We did not move pay ranges in 25, but we did give pay increases to employees. And then for FY26, we increased the ranges and employee pay. And usually at about the 5-year mark is when you would do another study of pay, not comprehensive like we did, touched every job description, all of that, but at the 5-year mark. So we implemented this in FY24. So ideally you would have that done. So if you needed to implement it, it would be in FY29.
Okay. That's good. I think this kind of goes to where my concern is in determining what our priorities are going to be. You know, we've made employee compensation a priority for several years now. At what point does something replace it? And this kind of goes to the question I asked previous to meeting tonight is, what are the metrics by which we're making these determinations? And that would apply to the strategic plan. And I understand that the strategic plan is undergoing some change and evolving and will include those kind of metrics. But I think it's one of the things that makes it a little bit difficult for us. And you'll remember last year, we started with, I think, 5 priorities and couldn't settle on 3 until several months later. And so it'd be good for us to do that sooner this time, I think. But this just kind of speaks to the question in my mind, at least, is how do we make that determination? You know, we said public safety, housing, and employees were going to be our priorities. Well, how did we do? And how do we make that determination? And have we gotten to a place in any one of those where we can say, well, we can move something else up into that position? I'm not suggesting that we need to do that. I'm just saying that's part of the equation for me in making a determination about what our priorities should be.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think to that, in the to Caroline, feel free to jump in on it. I think part of it is similar to a strategic plan, right? You have the day-to-day, right? There's the day-to-day of city government, the things we do. And I almost think that city employees are the day-to-day, the people who are doing the work every day. And so does that need to continue be a priority, or is that just a given, right? The given is that you're paying people a living wage to do the work that the city expects of them. But then, you know, priorities to me are similar to the strategic plan. Those are the other things that we would like to do as well. We would like to invest and increase affordable housing and housing options. We would like to continue to invest in public safety, and how does that happen? So that's, to me, is that question of priority setting. Is it, if it's just your bread and it's your normal day-to-day things, does it need to be on the list? Or I assume you know that city employees are a priority.
Absolutely. Well, that's true, but we did, you know, make it a point of determination that we were going to address that. I think you could say that about any of those strategic areas and any of the priorities. Public safety, of course, is essential to what we do. Infrastructure is, of course, essential to what we do. How do we, where do we focus in any particular year, and how do we make that determination about what that focus is going to be?
And I think right now we have a unique opportunity. And so we put out an RFP for consultants to help us build our next strategic plan. We have three proposals, and they're really impressive. We're going to interview those three companies to find the one person that will.
Somehow with a microphone, you're still very quiet.
We're at this point where I think we have a really unique opportunity. We did an RFP for proposals for strategic plans. We have three firms that submitted. Those three firms have submitted pretty impressive backgrounds. We're going to interview them. Want to say, is it next?
So I think one's scheduled right now, and then later this month.
Okay. So we're going to start that interview process, and we're going to select a firm to actually lead that process. We also do the community summit. And so I think here's an opportunity for us to use the community summit to actually talk to our residents about what our priorities should be to help us develop that strategic plan priorities. And I think once we have that in place, I think ideally the mayor's right. You know, employees should automatically be considered our bread and butter. We're a service organization. We put people into vehicles and put people into offices to provide our service to our residents. I mean, your commodity is your people. And so it should be a given that that's one of our top priorities. And so it's really looking at what should be the priorities in our strategic plan that kind of help us develop what our budget priorities should be. Mm-hmm. And all those things should tie together. And we should have correct metrics that actually can be measured and viewed to kind of make sure that we're moving forward in our processes. And so it's an opportunity to reset and kind of create that document, which should guide us moving forward.
So my assumption is that for you, city manager, departments are coming to you with their proposed budget.
Yes.
You view it through the lens of our priorities. And the idea is that this is kind of telling you also what to say not this year, because it's not, you know, I mean, it's a important thing for us to do, but it's not in a priority, especially if we have potential slow revenues coming in. I guess my question would be is to make sure that that happens.
Correct.
Because I know, you know, last year we said city employees were important, but it wasn't in the proposed budget originally, you know, what you first came to us.
Yeah.
So I think like is that acknowledgement from councils is like, if we really do mean this, then what does that look? And we have to be honest, I completely recognize looking at revenues coming in. So we're setting, this is the preliminary priorities discussion. But this is not the end all be all, because we don't know what revenues are going to look like coming in. So I wouldn't feel confident saying like, yes, 100%, give everyone a 10%. Everyone would love a 10% increase in raise. But if we don't have that money coming in, obviously it's not realistic.
Absolutely. And I think once we actually start the budget process, we're actually looking at forecasting for our revenues. That can help us really understand exactly what we anticipate coming in. And if there are, you know, revenue enhancements, what do those look like? Or if there are expenditure cuts, what do those look like? Because that has to be part of that conversation.
Right. I've got Betsy and then Vera.
Thanks. I was just going to say that I think we need to keep the employees on our list of council priorities, because it gets really easy to say, oh, well, this is a standard and we don't need to address it. And I think that's what happened before, is that we were like, oh, we're okay in the middle, or oh, you know, we need to wait longer to look at this, or we have this comp study that's coming in that's taking an extra 4 years because we had COVID or whatever came along. I think we need to make sure that we keep the employees on this list and that they are important, because they are what the city does. And then, you know, the expectations are that they're going to do a great job, which they're doing. So we want to keep those folks, and we want to keep paying them appropriately.
And I think that's how they ended up on that list, is because of other priorities, the employees felt like they weren't important to us. And so it was making sure that they understood that they are our top priority. And so that needs to be part of our conversation.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, but I was going to add a little bit more, which is, I absolutely think the city employees need to stay as a priority. I would love for it to be a given that our employees are our priority, but as you said, they ended up there because they were not feeling like a priority. And now we've just seen the pay raises go into reserve spending, which if I was an employee, I would be sitting there doing the math and figuring out, okay, and in so many years, the raise that I got is going to go away because the reserves will go away. And then I'm going to be making less than I was. And so I think as we are in that spot, we need to make sure that we are prioritizing stabilizing employee pay, ensuring that they know they are a priority, ensuring that we remember they are a priority in lieu of adding potential services in other priority areas we might have. We need to first get that employee pay actually into the general budget. So I think it needs to, if not move up in our priority list, absolutely stay in our top three.
One of the things that I wanted to name here when we're talking about employee raises and our revenues is that keeping up with our employee raises is, like many of the items in our priorities, not repeating those causes us to fall behind quickly. And it's not just about, is this still a priority? It's that if we don't repeat that, we fall behind. We don't keep in the middle, we fall behind. And we can very swiftly lose the leadership position that we are attempting to gain. And I think that is the same metric that we use to choose this. The painful part about that is that the economics of housing and public safety are similar in that respect. Also, our staffing for public safety is tied to this same issue. And keeping up with staffing and making sure that our officers and our firefighters are appreciated in their jobs and stay in their roles and have long careers with us. We have some fighting metrics pulling against us.
I think it's the next one, just like, what are our priorities this coming here?
Yeah,
he also needs his microphone back.
Mr. Carlin, probably.
Oh, okay. Carlin's talking.
No, it's your microphone. Okay. I was like the mayor said, I think our next step is to talk about what are the council's priorities. How do we sit down and establish those?
So I think one question I have is, I think it's aligned to what Nick brought up. And it's the how do you measure what we did? The examples for public safety are easy to track, right? It's the personnel, it's the investment in flock, it's the investment in technologies. For city employees, easy to track. It's the pay increases, those things. To your point, Matthew, is that your question at the beginning about what council has actual control over? Is housing what made you kind of think, because that's a harder one to measure, unless it's incentives we've offered or changes we've made to permitting, you know, is that the question, is like, what could we actually fund to do that?
Yes, especially with the housing, there's a lot that has to come from the public to help us with that priority. That's not something that we can do all on our own. And so having something on our side that is actionable, that we can check a box for, that we can say, we did this much last year, we did this much. I mean, even when you're looking at the rental permits, we really have no control over that. So, yes.
So I think then as we're, it's not our end all be all, I think probably what would be useful for us is similar to when we get the citizen survey results, like last year, got the citizen survey results, then staff was like, here's what we think we could do to address some of these issues. And they proposed starting up our own academy, doing these divert, you know, doing these sorts of things to help address that. Is it your thought, DeCarlin, that staff will come with, hey, if housing remains a priority, here are some things we think, and it has a budgetary impact to it?
And I think the because we've done the housing study, because we have the crosswalk that actually kind of explains some of what those priorities are from the housing study, I mean, those metrics are the metrics that we can utilize in order to say, here's the things that the housing study calls for. I think with, to Matt's point, while it talks about the number of permits being issued for new houses being built, you know, how much control does the city have in that? And what are the things we can do to actually help move those processes along? So some of it may not necessarily be a budgetary change. It could be the simple change to some of our codes on housing. Does that allow for more housing to be built? And does that meet that goal? And does that meet that metric? And so I think that's kind of where we're trying to, that part of, there's part of it that is a budgetary part, but some of it's just some of the regulatory things that we're doing.
Okay, Valerie and then Nick.
Yeah, I mean, to Carlin, you brought up exactly what I was looking for and hoping for, especially in that first slide when I was talking about making those connections to the implementation metric in the housing study. We have metrics for those. And the useful thing about that is we've also identified the partners for the other things. So we know which ones are in our court. We also know which ones tie into different financial expenditures, that we have a concrete metric for reporting and we have concrete ideas about ways that we can budget for it. One of the things that I would consider also, as we're talking about things that are perhaps less concrete, like code changes, are staff and reports. We tend to contract for studies for a lot of those items. And we have growing needs in our planning department to meet some of these requirements. I think that it is, there are things that are financial and direct, and there are things that might not look that way, but still are.
I think Valerie pretty well covered it, and you were going exactly where I was going to go as well. We do have metrics for that, as Valerie said. And I think, though, that this is where it gets a little confusing, because what we're talking about here is budget priorities, but they reflect what our priorities are as a city on the whole. And not all of that is necessarily financial or budgetary in particular. But yeah, addressing codes, addressing fees, and those kinds of things are the kinds of, so in my mind, it's like, the housing study does this for us. It says, here's where we want to go. Now, the question is, how do we get there? And we depend on the staff to make that happen. There's certainly budgetary considerations there. And any changes we make in some of the processes we do will have an impact on the budget as well, of course, because of the revenues that come in through those fees and so forth. So just saying that out loud, in that we're talking about budget here, but it really is beyond the budget of what we to accomplish altogether.
Oh, absolutely. It's what's interesting. So when Valerie was talking about what we have, we outsource a lot of our planning things. I mean, part of our issue is we couldn't hire planners because our salaries weren't at that point where it was more advantageous for someone to take on a job with the city. And now that we got our salaries up, we're able to hire a senior planner so that they can actually do that planning work. But if we can't maintain our salaries, we're not going to be able to maintain that staff. And I think that's kind of that ebb and flow of how we have to look at things.
Yeah. Okay, Betsy had her hand.
Maybe I'm jumping forward too far, but do we have, I mean, I like the priorities we had last year, and I don't really see a reason to change them because I feel like they were important to us last year, the year before, and they're still, I mean, we still need to be moving forward on those or maintaining those. Are there other priorities that we want to consider on this list? Or do people feel that some of these priorities need to come off? Or is this, am I jumping too far ahead in this conversation?
So last year, these are the three that came to the top. The other ones that we had were infrastructure and social services funding. which we didn't see any declines in them, just more of like kind of staying the same for what it was we saw invested in. Yeah, done.
I think I agree with you, Betsy. I think those should remain our top three. But I think, and this kind of goes to Matthew's issue or point about, you know, revenues and reserves and so on, that I would like to see a fourth, and that is to the strategic plan of resilient economy. Mm-hmm. What can we do, or what, you know, add that in? It's like I said, number four. But that's what we need in order to be able to generate the revenues to pay for the other things, the increased staffing, the raises, and so on. Like you said, we can't continue to dip into reserves because those will eventually dry up. So how do we grow the economy in Columbia? I know housing is tied into it. It's not an easy answer, but what can we do? Again, regulations, encouragement, recruiting, you know, ready, chamber, et cetera, bring those businesses in to grow our economy. So I would propose that we add a fourth, and that is, you know, increase economic activity, something along that line.
So a question I have, as we're developing this, you mentioned, you know, we're doing an evaluation of our current fees and cost of services, you know, kind of across the board to understand, right, that we're adequately covering the cost of doing these things, but doing it not in a way that's not allowing people then to develop housing, right? That's one of the conversations we've had about all the cost of permits and connection fees and all of that. I think with that, and I don't know if it's necessarily aligned with the economic increase, and that is one of our strategic plan areas, but is the, how can we evaluate the potential reductions in state and federal funding if we're going to continue that? On your housing slide, you have that there's an 18.5% increase. We have no control over CDBG home funding. And as we saw, it was at risk in this last proposed budget from the federal government. And so I think that I think it's going to be important for us to evaluate, you know, let's say those funding goes away. What can we locally do to shore up that loss? Because that's a lot of money that goes into our local economy, that helps build affordable housing, helps keep people in their homes. When we talk about housing, one of the other metrics, we're talking about the whole spectrum of housing units that are needed, from transitional, unsheltered, to market rate, to above market rate. And so what can we then absorb if some of those funding happens, and what are we prepared to say no on? And I think that's a tougher question. I'm not sure that we'll have any sort of answers to that, but it's something that we need to be prepared for.
Absolutely. And I think that's our reality, is that
that's
the reality. If our revenues don't catch up, then we have to look at, you know, what do we do? What can we do? Are there cuts that need to be made? And if not, how do we kind of lean on some of our other local partners to kind of step up and help assist?
Yeah.
Some of the things that I liked about the housing study is that it did identify new things that we're not currently doing that we can do. And there are a lot of partners that we have in this area, a lot of ways that we have in the past leaned on our partners, and we've helped contribute some of our ARPA funds. I'm excited to use our money in the things that are in our wheelhouse to improve. And many of those things make it less expensive for our nonprofit partners to build housing as well. So I think that this study helps us make pointed and purposeful improvements in how we address housing. And that may be the answer to handling slim funds in the future.
So the way that I'm hearing it from council is like maintaining, sounds like, kind of those three main priorities at the same time of balancing these additional revenue, as well as the evaluation of our existing sort of cost of service studies that we have. Is there anything else that council would want to help direct on for that for budget? This is not the first conversation we'll have. I guess question I will have is, not the last, I'm sorry, this is not the last conversation. This is the first. What is the plan for engagement now over the next few months for the, as this is developed? Last year we did kind of budget 101 town halls, community summit had the conversation. What are the plans? I don't know if you or Matt want to.
We have a schedule. I don't have it with me, but there is a schedule for what our plans will be in order to do some of that outreach.
Okay. And then that will then come back to us,
yes,
then to kind of inform us as we're developing. And we'll also have conversations about revenues and forecasted revenues sometime in the coming months.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it. I have it.
Okay. What we'll do is we'll send something to you guys.
Okay.
But there is a schedule that we'll call out for all the different meetings that we'll plan for. And all the engagement opportunities for our residents.
So I think one other thing.
Okay.
I think one other thing that will be useful to know is that, you know, the city manager gives direction to the department heads based on kind of these forecasts coming in. It'd be useful to for council to know, like, what sort of guidance have you given? Like last year, you know, there was the don't increase any cost, you know, reduce travel and training. It'd be useful for us to have that information and also for us to look at, because when council develops our budget, we have a very small budget. The majority of it goes to our boards and commissions. I was going to say, not knowing what those revenues look like. I know right now, in talking to the city clerk, you know, this is the time where they reach out to staff liaisons for our boards and commissions. I was probably going to go with requesting that boards and commissions not request any increases based on last year's budget, continuing what they have, but unless there was any other sort of, and Sheila can always give us the numbers on how much did they use for anything and did they use it all. We're only 3 months into the fiscal year, so not really knowing what would be spent. I think my recommendations would be just to keep it as is. We then do have, they have the time and any opportunity during the fiscal year to come back to us and request additional funding. But I know Sheila's like, those budgets are due in February, and so I need to give guidance to the staff liaisons. Is there any concerns from council on that one? All right, Sheila, does that help? Uh-oh, she's coming to the microphone.
I just want to make sure I understand. Based on what you said, I'll reach out to all of our staff liaisons for boards and commissions and tell them that funding is going to remain static. But if they do come across a need, they can send a report to council to try to get that need accommodated.
That sound? Yeah.
Is that correct?
Sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Sheila. And I think probably useful for council's consideration. Sheila, you might provide kind of like actuals versus budget of years past of boards and commissions. That'll be useful for us when making those determinations. Yeah. Not today, but yeah. Okay, so we have before us our budget calendar. So do you want to go over this, Matt?
Sure. So budget priorities, we had that in, that's today. We have our first budget town hall meeting scheduled for the 29th of January.
26th.
Or 26th of January, I'm sorry.
It's
wait.
What,
the
yeah.
Due date, that's our.
This is the due date for us. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was right. 29th of January. Then we have our second town hall meeting, will be the 26th of February. Budget amendments will be due for the second quarter they'll be first read to council the 2nd of March and then finalized 16th of March. We have April, we have our first work session going over revenues and forecast. That's subject to change. I mean, we could do it earlier if it looks like there's an issue, but right now that's about where we're looking at. And then we have our third town hall meeting on the 28th. Yes.
So when we're in April and we're looking at our forecast revenues, that's when we start making those decisions about having those conversations about this is what it's looking like. And so it's, then we'll have those conversations with department directors of, hey, we may need to scale back, we may need to make some of those changes because our revenues either are exceeding what we anticipated or not.
All right, and then that will follow up in May with the third quarter budget amendments. Those dates are yet to be seen. Then we have our fourth budget town hall meeting, which will be on the 28th of May. And all those budget town hall meetings, we're doing a morning or afternoon and then the evening session. I think this year we're going to try to do virtual on the evening sessions to get a little bit more participation, even though we had pretty good participation last year, just kind of help out. And then we have our first pre-council work session for CIP on the 15th of June. And then we'll start heading into the budget work sessions in July. And so we have the first and the second budget work session on the 14th and the 16th of July. We'll have the Carlin will be presenting the budget to employees, hopefully on the 16th as well. We'll have our budget press conference on the 17th. And then our third council work session, that's Saturday, the 19th. And then we'll go into public hearings in the regular council sessions for CIP plan. And then we have our final budget review on the 20th ahead of going to council, starting the actual budget here.
Well, thank you for providing those. I think usually, yeah, if you also wanted to send out the budget town hall dates and where in location so we can share that out, that'd be appreciated. Is there anything else that council wants to talk about pre-council? We've got 13 minutes until our regular meeting at 7. Is there anything on the agenda that anyone had any questions about tonight's agenda, just to kind of, they wanted to have an opportunity? Yeah, here.
Yes, actually, I need to pull up my notes really quickly. On the consent agenda, B32525, I had sent in a question about where exactly on the property the sidewalk will be. And in the response that we got, it said that staff will have a graphic prepared for distribution. Do you know when we can expect that? Will it be prior to the consent vote?
We have it now. Awesome. Clint's like, I got this. All right.
Figured.
Any other questions on items that are on the agenda this evening?
We have the opportunity to hand it out. Thank you so much.
Thanks, yeah, sir. I thought it was a full wave. I didn't know there was.
Any follow-up questions on that? Is that good for you? Okay. Any other questions on anything on the agenda or anything else for the good of the order? No? Appreciate it. I will say, when asking the questions on intro and first read, I do not need the answers. You do not, I mean, this is the whole intent of this was to give you the heads up of questions. So staff who are working so hard on Monday mornings, I don't need the answers to intro and first read.
We told them.
It's a heads up.
They just want
to. All right. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Sometimes I send those to council inquiry
yeah.
the day after, just so
yeah, they don't
have
do
to see it
yeah.
tonight.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and close our pre-council. See you all in 10 minutes in the chambers.